Now, it's Dr. Tucker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? Oh, don't.
Where you can tell.
I am here.
Where you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can talk and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about Toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So, by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon, at Roland J Studios. Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gangway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you here, Tokers and Tokettes, for hour two. On a beautiful day here in legal potland, Oregon. Smoking some legal pot. Just got done talking about religious use in the Radical Rant, and I want to continue on that here for a little bit. It's always a difficult subject for me to get into because, number one, I'm an atheist, okay? And there's... It's very clear. People know it. There's no doubt about it. I'm not shy about it, let's just say. So I already begin with some listeners out there with this deficit of goodwill because, oh, you're an atheist. You hate God. You hate religion. That's why you don't support, you know, the healing church or whatever. And that's not it. That's not it. I do think religion in general is silly, but I don't discount spirituality. I think there's a distinct difference between the two. But I don't want to go off on that tangent. Let's stick with this healing church and these arguments about religious use. Again, my big problem with it, and I get, you know, I'll have people say, oh, Russ hates religious use. Russ hates religious churches. And I'll also hear, you know, Russ hates medical marijuana. Russ hates patients. And that's not it. I don't hate religious use. I don't hate medical marijuana. I hate anyone telling anyone whether or not they can use weed. That's what I hate. I hate that one human being thinks he or she has the right to tell another human being what the hell to do with their body and mind. And that extends way beyond marijuana. We're talking any drug. You have the right to tell me whether or not I can use weed or acid or LSD or PCP or anything I want to put in my body. If freedom doesn't mean the freedom to fuck up my body any way I want, to fuck up my mind any way I want, so long as I'm not hurting you, then there is no freedom. If you don't have sovereignty over your own mind and body, then everything else is window dressing. Everything else is a gilded cage. So I take it farther than just marijuana, man. I think you have the right to use any drug you want. I think you have the right to eat until you get 1,000 pounds bloated. I think you have the right to do anything you want with your body. Skydive with it. Sell it for sex. Take out your kidney and sell that. I'm even for that, folks. I really am. And I know there's horrific arguments. Oh, that'll lead to the poor being harvested for organs. Hey, your body, your right to do with it what you choose. You want to hack parts off of it and sell them? Fine. So I take it even farther. And when it comes to the mind, I'm the same way. When I look at the First Amendment, I read the parts about freedom of religion. I don't take that to mean freedom to pick among a set of buildings where people gather on Sunday to compare clothes and sing songs. I don't think the gist of the First Amendment. When you take the First Amendment as a whole, freedom of assembly, religion, press, petitioning, and speech, when you take that as a whole, The First Amendment's all about the freedom to be, the freedom to think, the freedom to experience, the freedom to express yourself. So when we come back from break, I want to talk a little bit more about this, about what the First Amendment really means and what it means in context of drug use generally, marijuana use in particular, and why the medical and the religious argument for marijuana use run counter to the spirit of that First Amendment. Just hop on the logic train with me. I'll get you there. We'll also take a look at the rest of the news around the world of marijuana and cannabis. And if you're in the chat room, got any suggestions or questions, just let me know. We'll chat about it, because this is Toker Talk Radio.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Cannabis use isn't the only thing growing. So are we. Grow with us. CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development, and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
CannabisRadio.com keeps you in the know Monday through Friday on air and on demand with Cannabis Radio News, presented with the definitive worldwide news source, the Associated Press. Stay informed with exclusive news on all things cannabis. Cannabis Radio News, live weeknights at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, during the Russ Belville Show, or download the daily podcast exclusively on CannabisRadio.com, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. When breaking news happens in the cannabis industry, Cannabis Radio News delivers the details first.
Get the latest updates on the Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking The Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
Are you playing an acoustic guitar but want to be louder without an amp? Try a resonator guitar. The fingerboard extension has National Resophonic and other resonators, square necks and round necks. Stop by the fingerboard extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com. Go wild hog in the woods.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hey, quick reminder, coming up in the second half hour, we're going to replay that interview, our Cops Say Legalized Drug interview with Joe Baldy from South San Francisco. Sorry, Joe, if you were listening there in the first hour, when I thought I was going to put it in the first hour, and then I remembered I had that Sheldon Adelson piece that I had to get to. So if you've been listening all this time waiting for it, you thought I forgot you. I didn't forget you. We'll just put that in the second half hour. But I want to continue on this discussion on the religious use of marijuana. And again, it's not because I don't think you have a religious use right to use marijuana. I just think that that's superfluous. And it's a bit... separatist, if you will, elitist, that you would think because you picked the right religion, you get the right to use cannabis. Someone who is just merely a Catholic, well, they don't get to use cannabis. Someone who's just merely a Muslim, they don't get to use cannabis. But if you join the healing church, you picked the right religion, you get to use cannabis. So I've got a problem with it from that angle. And then I've got the problem with it that in making the argument, you're saying that there is some outside force, there's some outside reason that determines whether or not you get to do something with your body by using a plant. So it gives more ground to the opposition than they deserve. That's my problem with the religious use argument. It's unnecessary. And it's unnecessary, and it grants a tacit victory to our opponents. If we won the religious right argument, if we said, if they did decide that there would be legal religious use of cannabis, you can bet there would eventually be tests and requirements for that. There'd be ways of determining if you were sincere. And no matter where you set the line, you know, from all the way to strict, like you'd have to register, you'd have to be an accredited member of the church, blah, 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 blah. Or if you set it low, if you set the bar low, and if someone just says they're a member of a church, no matter where you did it, you'd be excluding somebody. Even at the lowest bar where all you have to just do is say it in court, I believe marijuana is a sacrament, you'd be excluding somebody who couldn't, for whatever moral reason, say that. And that person, I believe, has just as much right to use cannabis. That's the same point I make with medical marijuana. You draw this line where an outside arbiter, a third party, gets to determine whether or not you're sick enough to qualify. No matter where you draw that line, all the way up to, you know, Illinois' list of 44 particular ailments, or all the way as low as California's, you were able to say anxiety in front of a doctor and hand him $40. No matter where you draw that line, somebody's going to be on the wrong side of it. Somebody that has the right to use cannabis is going to end up on the wrong side. So making either the medical or the religious argument cedes to our opponents some cannabis consumers as being worthy of locking up, of punishing. And that's why I don't like those arguments. Now, it's not that the people making those arguments have that mindset. No. You ask any of these religious use people or any of the medical marijuana people, and they'll agree that nobody should be jailed for weed, that everybody has a right to use it. And this manifests itself on the medical side in this argument of all use is medical. Anybody who's using marijuana is getting a therapeutic benefit. Therefore, all use is medical. So in essence, what they're doing is saying that there's a third party arbiter as to whether or not you can use cannabis, but that third party would judge that anybody who uses cannabis has that medical right. So why do you need the third party arbiter? Why do you need an arbiter to decide something that doesn't need to be arbitrated? It makes no sense. If you believe that all people have the right to use cannabis, if you believe all use is medical, then you don't believe in medical marijuana. You believe in all use is none, that anybody has the right to use it. Similarly, I get the same response from some of the religious friends out there that say, well, Russ, because I'll say, oh, so you're going to get a religious right to use cannabis. Where does that leave us atheists? Oh, atheists can join our church too. But that's not the point. Atheists don't join churches. That's, you know, that's not what we're about. Granted, I did join the Universal Life Church so that I could perform wedding ceremonies and such, but that's a whole nother story. We'll talk about that some other day. Why should an atheist have to join a church would be what we'd ask. But I say, no, you know, anybody can be spiritual use. And if we get this decision, then anybody's use could be deemed spiritual. Well, once again, you're saying there's a third party to arbitrate whether or not we are spiritual users, but anybody's use is spiritual. Therefore, why do we need the third party? Part of this, I think, comes from magic bullet thinking. Comes from this political magic bullet thinking that, aha, I've got the secret that unlocks prohibition. Once I get my religious use case deemed in my favor, that will open up the doors for everyone to use it religiously, and then that will tear down prohibition. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someday that will happen. Maybe that is the way it falls, but I just don't see it happening that way. And there's, I guess the argument can be made that, hey, with medical marijuana, look what happened. You know, states have medical marijuana, and that led to states passing legal marijuana. Would those states have passed legal marijuana by 2012, 2014, had there not been medical marijuana in 96 and 98 that preceded them? Well, this is a tough thing to consider. Did medical marijuana lead to marijuana legalization overall? Now, I think there's a strong argument to say yeah, because you could look at the Gallup polls and the Pew Research polls and track them through the medical marijuana era and see how the polls continued to climb and climb and climb and climb for support as more and more people recognized medical uses and knew people that were medical users and they were legitimized and all of that. I think it's a strong, you can make, certainly make that strong argument, but I don't think it's a guaranteed argument, because I can make a counter argument for this. Medical marijuana in 1996 in California and 98 in Oregon, Alaska, and Washington took, and Colorado in 2000 for that matter, took the strongest cases for legalizing marijuana out of the public debate. Cancer patients, AIDS patients, people with severe multiple sclerosis and other disabilities were now out of sight, out of mind when it came to their use of marijuana. Once these states passed medical marijuana laws, there was no public outcry about, oh my God, the poor people that are getting, these poor sick people that are getting busted for marijuana. The only people left to fight for legalization were those of us deemed to be the recreational users. Those of us who didn't have that tug on your heartstrings, legitimate reason to get high. So did medical marijuana then make it harder? Did it make it take longer for us to pass marijuana legalization? By casting legalization as only about people wanting to get high. Could it have been that had medical marijuana not passed in California in 96 and not passed in those Western states in 98, and then we led into a 2000 with the George W. Bush administration with no medical marijuana states existing and the continuing stories piling up about sick people being arrested, terribly, terribly ill people suffering under the criminal justice system because marijuana is illegal? Could it have been that without medical marijuana, we might have gotten around to legalizing sooner? Could it have been that by 2010, when Prop 19 comes up and there's no legal states, there's no medical marijuana states whatsoever in the United States, that is seen as the option for legalizing? That is seen as the way that we help the sick people? Could it have been that when that domino falls, California being the first domino to fall, the rest of the states could move on to legalization and be buoyed by all the great news coming out of California of not just the tax revenue being raised and the law enforcement money being saved and the arrests ending, but also benefiting the medical marijuana patients at the same time? It's an interesting theory, and I've just recently come up with it. And I'm going to think more about it to see if I can come up with a better defense for it. It might be something that ends up in a book of mine. But maybe. I still think probably medical marijuana did more to help legalization than it did to hurt it. But it's interesting for us to consider how the world might have been different if all of us had been fighting for the same goal of legalization for all of us for the past 20 years, rather than being split into the medical and the recreational movements and having, in some cases, the recreational movement fighting against the legalization movement. It's always fun to play what if, and it's impossible to tell how things might have turned out, but I'm not willing to fully concede yet that we couldn't have done legalization without medical marijuana. So let's consider that, and we're going to have to take a break here because it is just about that time here in the Pacific Northwest when we all gather together in our union-mandated safety break.
Well, that was really horrible.
No, oh, you're always complaining!
All right, folks, it's 420. in the Pacific time zone. Time for us to take a break. And when we come back, we will play the replay of that interview with Joe Baldy from Cops Saying Legalized Drugs, our LEAP segment. These days, as we're having so much tension with the police, it's always nice to hear from a cop who's on our side. Be right back after this.
We don't limit how much you smoke, and we don't limit where you listen. Cannabis Radio is now on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Oh, Lady Marijuana, lama tell you something now. Bought a game for your phone, gonna make you say, wow! The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seeds, sell the bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little, your empire grows large. Put different celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong. Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Himpy, that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot-proofed by the man who run High Times. Oh, yeah? Get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me on crops, you know? Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platshorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit NewEraCPAs.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the New Era.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalized drugs.
Welcome back, everybody, for our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment. We've got our guest on the line. It's Joe Baldy, former San Francisco Police Department. Hello, Joe. How are you?
How's it going, Russ?
Doing very good. So glad to have you here. And could you tell our listeners a little bit about your experience working in law enforcement in San Francisco?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me get one thing straight. It was South San Francisco.
Oh, South San Francisco. I keep forgetting those are two separate places. Thanks for the correction. I appreciate that.
Okay. I served as a police officer with South San Francisco from 1987 until 92 when I was retired due to injuries sustained on duty. And during that time, one satisfying, rewarding aspect of my job was being on the front line of the war on drugs. I mean, I was a drug warrior. That's what I wanted to do. I was about 6 years old when Nixon declared the war on drugs.
Yeah.
I was raised with stories of neighborhood kids who ruined their lives and their families' lives because of drugs. You know, and I thought, they're immoral people, and they need to be locked up and kept away from society. You know, it wasn't until years after my retirement that I began to see that the war on drugs has an has been failing. Since my enforcement days, I mean, drugs are more prevalent, they're more potent, less expensive, and the violence associated with the drug trade has drastically increased. You know, Russ, we just got to look at alcohol prohibition. You know, it's such a glaring parallel of our own drug prohibition. And alcohol prohibition created Al Capone. Drug prohibition created El Chapo Guzman.
Absolutely correct. We're speaking again with Joe Baldy from the South San Francisco Police Department, former officer there. And so you went into this as a drug warrior, somebody who thought that drug use, drug peddling were immoral. Seeing the results of the drug war up close and personal, firsthand, did it cause you to change your perspective on drug use itself? Or did you just come to the realization it just wasn't working? I guess what I'm asking is, did you change your moral view on drug use?
Well, the moral view is we need to get people who have addiction problems. It's not a law enforcement issue. It's a health issue. Now, we know that some drugs are incredibly dangerous, and we're not saying to take dangerous drugs. We're saying that it needs to be taken out of the law enforcement responsibility. It's a health issue. And it needs to be treated that way. Since, you know, my enforcement days, and even since I was a young kid, I grew up in the same city I worked in. Years before I got on the force, actually my senior year in high school, we had a local drug dealer. He was a neighborhood kid, grew up, nice family, nice car. And Labor Day weekend before my senior year in high school, he was shot in the head. A marijuana deal gone bad. The suspects, both 18 and 19 years old, came in with shredded paper in exchange for money, and they shot him point blank in the head. Now, when I went to high school a couple of weeks later after Labor Day, did the marijuana in my high school stop? No. And when I was a cop years after in the same city, we still had undercover buys in that same high school, it continued. The war on drugs has failed. Prohibition has failed to stop the supply and demand on drugs.
So it sounds like you're more on the tip of it doesn't matter what moral decision we make about it. You can hate it. You can love it. We just have to determine what's the smart way to deal with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everyone has, you know, adults have the right to, in their own home, if not hurting anyone, if they want to use dangerous drugs, that's up to them. Law enforcement should not be in the process of apprehending and incarcerating these people for stuff they're doing responsibly in their own home, not hurting anyone else.
You know, this is something that dovetails into the events that we've suffered in this nation over the past week, particularly the execution of 5 police officers in Dallas. And one of the responses we heard from the Dallas chief there was, we're asking our police to do too much. We're asking them to be law enforcement and mental health and drug rehab and all of these things. Is that where you're going with this? Is that your thought that ending this war on drugs would free up our police to do their real jobs?
Absolutely. You know, the role of law enforcement should be to support reducing the harm of drugs and stopping the violence associated with it.
Now, part of the
war on marijuana in California, you know, throughout the years, there's been thousands of American lives, 10,000 of Mexican lives ruined by the drug gangs and cartels.
Yeah. And part of this also that I think we need to think about when we're talking about the people whose lives are disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs tends to be young people and people of color. And they tend to be impacted because their use can't be safely inside their homes. They live in, say, Section 8 housing where drug use is not allowed, or they've got relatives living there that have parole or probation. They can't have drugs around them. So what's the answer for, in a legalization world, the people that don't have the home to smoke in and not harm anyone else with?
What was that again?
What would the answer be? You know, California's got this Adult Use of Marijuana Act coming up,
right?
And you may legalize marijuana in California, but for the people that, you know, black folks, black youth that are getting busted because they're sitting on the stoop and they got nowhere else to smoke, what are we going to do for them?
Well, we need to legalize it. We need to legalize it so we get it off the streets, so they don't have sitting around anywhere out in the public We need to regulate it. We need to legalize it and control it. So we get it out of the streets. We get it into dispensaries that do not sell to kids. I mean, I know legalization sounds scary, but it really is taking the illegal market away from the street dealers and bringing it into dispensaries that in California that will not sell to anyone under 21.
Well, I wonder what are your thoughts on something like a pot lounge or a public place where people could go like they do with alcohol to be able to consume together, to be able to gather together and not harm others?
I have no problem with those. I have no problem with those. I believe there should be, just like alcohol, there should be places like that that, again, are regulated, have to be 21, and if people, adults, are using it in a responsible manner, I see no problem with that.
Okay.
And that the police shouldn't be there enforcing or raiding these lounges. And I know there's a lot of communities that are interested in that. And, you know, the legality is, we probably have a way on that. But I get it off the streets, get it into regulated, licensed lounges. That sounds good to me.
All right. We're speaking with Joe Baldy. He was an officer with the South San Francisco Police Department, and he's a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, the world's leading organization of former law enforcement professionals speaking out against the folly of drug prohibition. You can find him at leap.cc, LEAP.cc, and follow him on Twitter at CopsSayLegalize. And Joe, this is a great opportunity coming up here for California with what is now called Prop 64, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act. And when you're out there in your communities talking to people, what are some of the concerns they have? Because, you know, it seems like most people think it's a fait accompli. It's going to be legalized in California sooner rather than later. So for those people that are still afraid of it, what do they fear and what do you tell them?
Well, the most what I hear is that because it's going to be legal, that kids are going to use it. And that's not the goal. In fact, obviously, it's the complete opposite. And once we legalize it and regulate it and have it in dispensaries and have it so you have to be 21, you know, there's, according to government surveys, there's about 1 million teenage drug dealers across the country. Mm. And what do they say is easier to buy, marijuana or beer? Well, it's marijuana. Why? I mean, there's thousands of liquor stores all over the place. Well, because liquor stores check IDs. They don't sell to kids, but the dealers do. And when kids are going to dealers for marijuana, there's also a tendency to go, hey, let's do some crack. Let's do some coke. Let's do some heroin. With the passage of Prop 64 in California in November, we will get the drug dealer, the street dealer, out of the streets and away from our kids. So our law enforcement can do other things, deal with violent crimes, rapes. You know, in Cleveland last year, where they had 400,000 rape tests that were untested, they weren't a priority. The drug tests were.
Mm. What a shame that is. You've perfectly encapsulated something we hear on the show called WOTC, What About the Children. The other thing we hear a lot as a fear is something I called SMOF, Stoned Mayhem on the Freeways. Does the legalization of marijuana worry you with respect to traffic safety, especially in a city like South San Francisco?
You know, we don't want anybody using any products that's going to impair their driving, you know, but we need to have effective laws that don't punish people for driving high. You know, is that a reason to keep marijuana illegal? No, it's just like a reason to ban alcohol, which causes far more damage on the roads. And we need to put more education and prevention and learning the proper techniques. Some states have for the THC, the presumptive test, and those are just not accurate. AAA and National Highway Transportation Association stated that those were not valuable tests because THC metabolizes different in your body than alcohol. And we need to really figure out what's the best way to find the right amount of when people are actually high while they're driving, or if it was 4 or 5 days later and they use cannabis and it's still in their system. Mm-hmm. You know, those need to be figured out. But here in California, we have we already utilize recognized training and best practices designed to detect roadside impairment like this. Other states, not so much.
Right. Yeah. It's not as if legalizing marijuana in California is going to legalize stone driving. It's always been illegal in California, and you guys have been pretty good at picking it up, from what I understand.
Absolutely.
One final question with just about a minute to go here. Joe Baldy, we briefly mentioned earlier the problems this country's been through with respect to police and law enforcement among certain communities. How much do you feel that this drug prohibition has led to the friction that we find between, say, African-American and Latino communities versus the police, the feeling that they're occupied?
Well, where do most neighborhoods do police make most marijuana arrests? You know, they're poor neighborhoods. Well, they're especially poor black neighborhoods. But it's a big misconception, you know, that people have on the war on drugs. Because government surveys repeatedly show that white kids are, if anything, more likely to use marijuana than black kids. Mm. But when we conduct random searches, sting operations, large-scale investigations in black neighborhoods, who ends up getting popped? Well, black kids. You know, they're almost four times likely to be arrested than whites for marijuana possession. So they aren't more likely to use. And in California, black and Latinos are disproportionately arrested for marijuana. So, the racial discrimination in law enforcement, it harms the relationships between communities and police. And that's prevalent of what's going on now. Mm.
So well put. Joe Baldy, formerly with South San Francisco Police Department, currently with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us, and good luck with Prop 64 this November.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Russ.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll be back with the Radical Rant. We're going to talk about K2 and zombies in New York City when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Maui Wowie, Acapulco Gold, California Kush, our strains stretch everywhere too.
This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
While the feds and state are doing their dance, you still need to transact business and manage your cash. Go professional and let your customers pay with PayQuick. They pay you and they earn rewards points. PayQuick connects to your bank account for free and secures all of your transactions. And with PayQuick, you can pay your producers and processors for free. Plus, it pays to have it because it makes depositing your cash safe and so easy. No cops, no crooks, just compliance and comfort, knowing you have your cannabis business in check with PayQuick. PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
The smoke is rising, and the next crop of podcasts devoted to cannabis providers and enthusiasts are ready to be harvested.
Welcome to the Cannabis Radio Network,
founded by respected rainmakers who have been producing award-winning podcasts for over a decade. Industry headlines, business updates, medical reports, marketing, and e-commerce education rolled up perfectly for your consumption.
Let's grow together. The Cannabis Radio Network. CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Farrakh has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 40 after the hour here at Toker Talk Radio. And we were talking earlier about religious use arguments and medical use arguments. And I want to start honing in on a couple of the other arguments, the secular arguments, if you will, for marijuana legalization that are also a bit dangerous. One of them is the safer, and the other one is the tax argument. Okay, so let's start with the first one. Marijuana is safer. Marijuana is safer. Marijuana is safer than alcohol, is one that we use quite a bit, and it has been to good effect. When it was first concocted by Mason Tvert and some of the other guys out there, Steve Fox and the rest at MPP, they realized when they polled people, there was a huge discrepancy between people who, if people thought marijuana was safer than alcohol, they supported legalizing it. The ones who didn't think that were the ones who overwhelmingly opposed it. So they recognized if we educated people that marijuana was safer than alcohol, then legalization numbers would come up as a result. And I do think that is as much to credit for the rising poll numbers for marijuana legalization as medical marijuana was. So that earlier argument I was mentioning, you know, did medical marijuana lead to legalization? Yeah, but I think also the safer argument helped to lead to legalization. But the thing we need to be careful about here is that marijuana is safer gets conflated into marijuana is safe. And if that starts to take a hold, if the public gets the feeling that that's what we're saying, that marijuana is safe, we're in trouble. Because marijuana isn't safe. Nothing is safe. But is it safer relative to something else? Already we've seen a couple of high-profile cases of people who ingest marijuana edibles and either kill someone else or kill themselves, jumping off the balcony, that case in Colorado. We get the reports of the over-ingestions by kids and pets that are taken to the ERs and the veterinarians and so forth. And we don't have long-term understanding of what regular mega dabbing will do to you. We don't know. We don't. If we've never had the availability and tech to like overclock the endocannabinoid system to the degree some of the younger folks now using dabs all the time can accomplish. I'm not saying we're going to see some sort of harms, but we just don't know yet. With smoking joints and using hash, you know, regular old bubble hash and stuff, we got thousands of years of evidence on that. Highly concentrated cannabis oil dabs used a lot by a larger population. We don't have data on yet. So who knows? We might end up in a position where if the public has judged us to have been saying marijuana is safe, and then they have all this evidence that it's not, and they get more and more of these stories, which will naturally happen as more and more states legalize. You know, after this election, we might have 9 legal states. They're bound to be more stories. Even if an adverse marijuana story is a 1 in a million story, we're heading 36 million people out of California alone, right? So we need to be careful on that. We need to be careful about the marijuana is safer argument. And I guess what the point I'm trying to make here is that, yes, marijuana is safer, but that's not the reason I should be allowed to use it. And that leads me to the other point that is problematic that we need to be careful about. Is the tax revenue argument. The argument about, well, you know, we can tax marijuana and help the schools. We can tax marijuana and raise this money. Because a lot of that taxing the marijuana is based on a sales tax or an excise tax based on the price of marijuana. And sure, as the price of marijuana is still in the, you know, $1,000 to $1,200 a pound range wholesale and is retailing for $10 to $15 to $20 a gram, then yeah, you're going to make some tax revenue off marijuana. But as more states legalize, and especially as California kicks into some high capacity production, once we hit the 2020s, what's the price of marijuana going to be? How much are you going to get for a pound wholesale? And if that gets so low, and the reports coming out of Colorado and all these other states is how their marijuana tax revenues are declining sharply, and the revenue forecasts for the other states in the future that want to legalize start to show that the taxes aren't even going to cover the administrative costs of legalization, then where are we? then we're in a situation where we have, we'll start to have calls for the excise tax to be based on weight. That's what you'll see. As the ounces get cheaper, you'll see them calling for a tax per ounce rather than a tax per the price. But all that does is make the tax on marijuana disproportionately high, especially as it becomes more plentiful. Like this California Adult Use of Marijuana Act has a $9.25 an ounce tax on flower. $9.25 an ounce doesn't sound so bad when you're talking about a $300 an ounce flower. It's, you know, in the 10% range, or the, not 10%, 3-4% range, right? But when the price of marijuana gets down to $10 an ounce, a $9.25 an ounce tax sounds pretty big. And then a tax that's disproportionately large like that is just going to fuel a black market that doesn't want to pay that tax. And then that becomes more argument for the opposition that legalizing marijuana is not going to end the black market. So we have to worry about this tax argument, because as time goes on, it's going to be a less potent argument as the prices of marijuana inevitably crash to where they should be. This is where I get back to my underlying philosophy of all use is none yet. Because the argument that I have the right to do with my mind and body what I choose, so long as I don't harm others, is immune to all these other arguments. If the price of marijuana crashes and we can no longer raise tax revenue through marijuana use, or even, heaven forbid, legalization actually ends up costing the state more money than it would save or that it would raise, that is still not an excuse to punish me for using marijuana. We can only just look to alcohol. Here is something that we know we can demonstrate causes more harm, causes more cost to society than the tax revenue it brings in by a 10-to-1 margin, and leads to tens of thousands of deaths. And yet we recognize the right of an adult human being to consume alcohol to alter their consciousness, so long as they're not actively harming others. Even though we know it will cause many of them to do so. It'll cause many of them to become aggressive. It'll cause many of them to drive drunk. But we respect that individual right to get drunk. And likewise, we should respect the individual right to get stoned, even if getting stoned does lead to some sort of increase cost in society. Same with this, with the safety argument. If I stand by my principle that I have the right to alter my body and conscience, and you have no right to tell me not to, even if some people do alter their body and consciousness and cause some problems, like the guy who shot his wife in Colorado, it's still not enough excuse to stop me. Because then you have to stop everybody from drinking because of the far greater likelihood that someone who's a drinker is going to cause someone else harm. To me, the legality of marijuana is decided by the legality of alcohol. The fact that our country decided to re-legalize it with the 21st Amendment, to me, settled the case that we have the right to intoxicate ourselves, even though it causes a greater harm to society, we have that right to intoxicate ourselves. And so I don't need to tell you that I have anxiety or depression, or I'm too sick, or get a doctor's note, or pay the state for a permission slip, or go to a particular church, or worship a particular book, or a particular god. I don't need any of that. I'm a citizen of the United States, and I'm an adult. And if I have the right to drink, I have the right to smoke pot, snort cocaine, shoot heroin. You can't show me that any of those are more harmful than the alcohol you're allowing me to use and the tobacco you're allowing me to use. Now, if the government comes around to banning tobacco and alcohol for the reasons they give us for why they want to keep marijuana banned, then we start to have that fight over which is safer and what levels of are acceptable of in the trade-off between liberty and social order and public health. But since we've shown the trade-off with alcohol and tobacco to be acceptable, there is no logical reason to not accept that for cannabis at least. And certainly some of the hallucinogens out there, mushrooms, LSD, MDMA, these things that don't have addictive potential and are self-limiting drugs. And I would even argue it that the allowance for us to use alcohol is enough allowance for us to use any of the other drugs as well. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll wind things up. Having trouble with my face today. I don't know if you notice. I'm getting my teeth fixed. I'm getting these Invisaligners coming. And the reason why is because I'm a tongue thruster, apparently. I sleep with my tongue poking out of my mouth. It's really weird. I've caught myself now. I wake up and it's like, why is my tongue all the way hanging out of my mouth? And this is causing my front teeth to push out of my face. And to the point where I have trouble saying things like new. I can't make that W sound. Can't get my lip around my buck teeth. Oh, the humanity. We're back right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
How high do you like your profit margin?
CannabisRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Montel Williams. Most of you know me as a talk show host, but I'm also an author, actor, single father of four, avid snowboarder, and I'm also a medical marijuana patient. Living with multiple sclerosis, I'm in pain every day. Medical marijuana is my last resort, and it helps me when all other drugs have failed. If you'd like more information about medical marijuana, you can contact the Marijuana Policy Project at mpp.org or call 1-877-JOIN-MPP.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The Russ Belville Show. Chat is for friends 18 and older. We expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards that you can visit.
Don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games? Consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 54 after the hour, just closing up shop here. I was checking out some of the late-breaking news stories here on the Marijuana Newswire, and there's so many of these busts that have taken place in Northern California. I was just reading through this, and they list these, you know, 19,000 plants in Mendocino County here, and 9,000 plants over in Trinity County there, and 8,000 plants in Humboldt County there, and evidence of diversion of water and pollution and all the kind of things that come with the illegal grows. And this is something that is going to be interesting as we transition into legalization, because I want illegal grows under legalization to be busted. I want the people who are flouting the laws and the regulations. I want the people that are poisoning putting out poison for rats and, you know, diverting water and all that. I want them to be busted. I do. If we're gonna come up with laws, we're gonna legalize this, then let's legalize this. And that's gonna be a weird place to be in. It's gonna be weird to have to support law enforcement of legalization of helicopters and pulling plants and citing people. It's going to be a weird thing because we don't want anyone to go to jail for a plant, but how are you going to be opposed to enforcing the law once we come up with legalization? And there will still remain in under the law misdemeanors and felonies for these acts of large-scale growing and being prosecuted under state law. And the states are going to want to do this to show the feds that, hey, we said we're going to legalize and it's going to be, you know, legit. So they're going to be, you know, incentivized to press these cases. And then where are we stuck as marijuana reformers? On the one hand, to have to think, well, nobody should go to jail for a plant, but we fought for legalization, and this is the bargain we made, is that there'd be laws. So how do we say you shouldn't lock up this guy? We can say that the punishment doesn't fit the crime, but we do have to say it's a crime, don't we, if there's going to be legalization like this? I mean, if someone went out into the national forest and tore up a bunch of land to plant, you know, wine grapes and was harvesting those and selling wine illegally on the street corners without paying the alcohol taxes, wouldn't that person get busted and probably do some time? And wouldn't we want to prosecute them? It's going to be a whole lot of paradigm changing going on in the next 10 years, let me tell you. That's all the time we got for today. Time flies when you legalize. Thanks for joining us for these past couple hours. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and views you can use for the cannabis community. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you